Now, the Prime Minister is in Northern Ireland. Boris Johnson has begun meeting the five main parties. Last night, he had a private dinner, not with the five main parties, just with the DUP, just with Arlene Foster, Sir Geoffrey Donaldson and Nigel Dodds. This morning, the DUP leader, Arlene Foster, outlined what they had discussed.
The fact that we all both wanted to get a deal. We talked about the fact that Dublin and indeed Brussels needed to dial back in the rhetoric and be a willing partner to find a deal, not just for the United Kingdom, but for the Republic of Ireland and the whole of Europe. No deal is on the table because of the fact that we have a very belligerent European Union who, instead of focusing on a deal that was good for all of us, wanted to break up the United Kingdom, something, of course, which no British Prime Minister should be a part of.
I think one of the questions for all the political parties, including the DUP and Arlene Foster, is with the civil service saying that some 40,000 civil service jobs could be at risk in a no deal scenario. What is the political party's reaction to that? So if there is a no deal, 40,000 jobs in Northern Ireland could be at risk. That's quite an incredible statistic, isn't it? And would that really play out in Northern Ireland? Nicola Mallon, the SDLP MLA, with us this morning. Nicola, morning to you.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. You're probably not too chuffed at the dinner last night, just being with the DUP, but you're going to have to get over that. Is there any optimism here about getting Stormont up and going again?
Well, we'll be saying very clearly to the Prime Minister this morning that, you know, he may have a cosy relationship with the DUP, he can wine and dine with them. But the facts are that the DUP do not speak for the majority of people living here, and not least on the issue of Brexit, where the majority voted to remain. We'll be saying very clearly that sitting back and objectively observing his rhetoric and his actions to date, it shows how little he understands and cares for people living here, and he needs to urgently reverse that. So we'll be getting in with very clear messages. He needs to live up to his obligations under the Good Friday Agreement. That means avoiding the hard Brexit, not hurtling us towards it, as you said. The civil service here is predicting 40,000 immediate job loss. We're going to be saying to him that he needs to restore the devolved institutions and stop pandering to the DUP. And we're going to be saying to him that he needs to positively build and strengthen relationships north, south and east, west across these islands, because to date his actions and his rhetoric is going some way to unpicking that. And those are critical relationships, not least in the face of Brexit.
Yeah, but it's easy, so easy to do this point scoring, isn't it? And it's easy to criticise. But what's the solution here, Nicola?
The solution very clearly is that he needs to avoid a hard Brexit. He needs to understand the situation and the complexities, the damage that will be done to prosperity, the hardship and poverty that a hard Brexit would cause, and how it would unsettle our delicate peace process. He needs to be impartial and reflect and live up to his obligations under the Good Friday Agreement. That's an international treaty. That requires that he and his government and his Secretary of State be impartial. We know, Stephen, because I get frustrated that there's a sense of that definition of madness when you keep doing the same thing and expecting a different outcome. We keep getting into talks processes that become privatised and they're left to the DUP and Sinn Féin, and we know that the outcome is never good. For 2.5 years, people here have been denied a government. So that strategy does not work. The British Prime Minister needs to understand that. He needs to recognise that the way that his government and previous Secretary of State have handled this has failed abysmally.
Yeah, but you're blaming Boris Johnson now on that. Why don't you blame yourselves? The Northern Ireland political parties cannot find agreement among yourselves. You can't do it. Take Boris Johnson out of the equation and you're still all fighting with each other.
Okay, so let me be honest in answering that. The SDLP has put proposal after proposal, pragmatic, significant compromises on our part on the table around the petition of concern to try to get this place back. We have worked hard and diligently with the Ulster Unionist Party and the Alliance Party, and we have come from different perspectives to shared positions on a number of the key issues across the work streams of this talk process. So the parties in the middle have tried. The fact of the situation here is that we cannot have restored institutions. We cannot have devolution if the DUP and Sinn Féin do not agree. People here are suffering because politics, across the board from what I can see, is not about solving people's problems. It's about a game of chicken. It's a game of chicken between the DUP and Sinn Féin. It's now a game of chicken between Boris Johnson and his government and the rest of the EU state.
Yeah, Sir Geoffrey Donaldson has said that Boris Johnson is absolutely prepared to go through with a no-deal Brexit.
Well, That sums it all up. And what we'll be saying today is you cannot play with people's lives and livelihoods here. You need to listen to the business community, the business leaders, communities and political leaders here, and you need to understand the damage that that will cause. You cannot play fast and loose with the lives of the people of Northern Ireland, their livelihoods or our peace process.
Okay.
The SDLP will be honest and frank in this meeting and will continue to do what we can. But other parties need to step up and we need to remember its obligations.
Nicola, thank you. The BBC Northern Ireland political correspondent, Enda McClafferty, with us this morning. So what's happening? You're up at Stormont, Enda. What's happening up there?
Well, right now, those discussions with Boris Johnson are underway. We understand he's currently involved in talks with Sinn Féin. But we had a pretty surreal moment, Stephen, within the past few moments here up underneath Carson's statue on the steps of Stormont. We have lots of different groups of protesters here trying to get their message across to Boris Johnson. And what we had were workers from Harland and Wolff, who are very concerned about the future of the jobs, standing alongside the Irish language campaigners. And we had some of the Harland and Wolff workers, of course, many of whom are from East Belfast, chanting in Irish to save the shipyard, nodding to the fact that they were standing beside Irish language enthusiasts. So it was a pretty surreal set of circumstances, it has to be said, and all under the shadow of the Carson statue. Now, we're not expecting any kind of that harmony to be happening inside the talks room right now with Boris Johnson, because judging by the language being used by Mary Lou McDonald, Sinn Féin president yesterday, there's been a lot of anger being building up in Northern Ireland over the course of the past week among some of the parties, and they will be letting loose, if you like, on the Prime Minister, particularly over his no-deal Brexit plans.
Well, they can let loose all they want, but the very fact that it has been released to the public that Boris Johnson had dinner with the DUP exclusively last night, Enda, nothing in Northern Ireland happens by chance. That is an open statement of where the power lies in the Prime Minister's mind, surely, and the DUP's mind.
Yes, and many of the other political parties today are perhaps thinking to themselves, is Boris Johnson's primary mission here in Northern Ireland to keep the DUP sweet first and foremost, and then restoring devolution as a secondary target, if you like. But let's not forget, Stephen, whenever Theresa May came to Northern Ireland as well, she also had dinner with Arlene Foster on the eve of a series of talks with the other parties, giving the rest of them 15 minutes and giving Arlene Foster, if you like, an audience over dinner the night before. So it is a bit of a track record when it comes to the Prime Minister right now, when they are depending so much on the 10 DUPs to keep them in power. But nonetheless, it has set the tone, Stephen, for the discussions today, and there's a lot of anger among the other political parties saying, despite the optics of last night, despite how the DUP might try and build up their relationship with Boris Johnson, what they want to see is impartiality, and they're not seeing it right now from the Prime Minister.
Well, you could flip the coin, and that could make the situation for the DUP end quite challenging. For example, some of the public might say, sorry, to the DUP, they might say, sorry, Arlene Foster and others, were you having dinner with the man who is not stepping in and stopping Harland and Wolff closing down? What did you say over this dinner? How much of Harland and Wolff was discussed when you were drinking whatever it was you were drinking and eating your nice steak? In terms of the Queen being taken down from Stormont buildings, Did any of the people who were at that dinner, Arlene Foster, Sir Geoffrey Donaldson, Nigel Dodds, when they were chewing into their nice bit of beef, bring that up and use this relationship with Boris Johnson to say, we ain't having dinner with you. You're getting not a shred of bread from us unless you stop this. Some unionists might be asking that question.
That's right, and it's something we'll never probably get to the bottom of, Stephen, what exactly was discussed last night. But there are a lot of Harland and Wolff workers here today, and I'm sure many of them are of the thinking that the DUP is perhaps fighting their corner. We know Gavin Robinson, the MP, said he had raised it with number 10. But you can't get away from the fact, Stephen, that the DUP say they're in there because of the confidence and supply deal, and they say that that deal is going to bring more money to Northern Ireland once they renew it with the Conservative Party. So they would argue, of course, that what they're doing is positive work on the ground to try and improve the finances of Northern Ireland. But as you say, there are others out there who will take a very different view of this. They will say this is simply about keeping power where power resides at number 10, keeping Boris Johnson in power and standing shoulder to shoulder with him as he progresses along this no-deal Brexit route.
You're up at Stormont. I believe that Sinn Féin are approaching the mics. What else is happening in the background there?
Yes, that's right. You can probably hear, Stephen, let me move a little bit closer just. You can probably hear the campaigners, the protesters in the background. We have Irish language protesters here. We have the Harland and Wolff staff, as I say, feeling under threat right now. We also have the Ballymurphy families here. They obviously have big issues around legacy. And we also have the border communities group here as well to flag up their concerns about a no-deal Brexit. So there's a cacophony, if you like, of protesters here making a lot of noise as Sinn Féin get ready to talk after their meeting with Boris Johnson this morning. What was interesting too, listening to Boris Johnson this morning, Stephen, was that on his way in, he very much said his focus was about restoring devolution, and he felt that there would be a little bit, as he put it, of talk around Brexit. I think he was going to be in for a little bit of a surprise stepping inside that room to find that the most of the parties were going to talk about Brexit, perhaps, and not what is not happening up here at Stormont. And one other thing to note as well about Boris Johnson here today, Stephen, when he travelled to the other parts of the Union, he travelled to Scotland and Wales, of course, and he took questions from a journalist, which were then fed out to the other broadcasters. In Northern Ireland, he didn't want to do that. He said this morning that he was simply going to stand in front of one camera, deliver one statement, and then move on. As it turned out, the reporter, against the wishes of Boris Johnson's people, did manage to fire one question before Boris Johnson walked off. So you can see already that this team are nervous about coming to Northern Ireland and the possibility of exposing him to some very hard questions.
Well, Enda, thank you very much, and we may pop back to you in a moment or two. In fact, here is Michelle O'Neill, Mary Lou McDonald, and Conor Murphy, just approaching the mics now. I think they're getting ready and to deliver this statement.
Yes, I can see them. Yep.
And there's a placard in the background about a hard border and the implications of that if that were to happen. Here's Mary Lou McDonald now.
Met with Boris Johnson. We've had a fairly extensive conversation with him in which we have raised the issue of Brexit, his course of action, which seems to us to indicate that he has set the compass for a disorderly and a crash Brexit. We've challenged him very strongly on that policy. We've set out very clearly that this would be catastrophic for the Irish economy, for Irish livelihoods, for our society, for our politics, and for our peace accord. We've made it clear to him that the extensive planning that he tells us he is carrying out in respect of a potential crash Brexit has to include the constitutional question and the issue of a border poll here in Ireland. We've stated to him very clearly that Brexit in any event, but certainly a disorderly Brexit, represents, in anybody's language, a dramatic change of circumstances on this island, and that it would be unthinkable in those circumstances that people would not be given the opportunity to decide and on our future together. That's a conversation that we will continue with the Prime Minister. We've also raised the issue of talks, the re-establishment of power-sharing government, sustainable government. We have rehearsed again with him the outstanding issues, issues which you will recall are about rights, citizens' fundamental rights, and you can see the rights represented here with protesters that have gathered this morning. We've made clear to him that the ongoing indulgence of the DUP and rejectionist unionism needs to stop. That he, as the head of government, has to make clear to the DUP that they can no longer continue to deny language rights, marriage equality rights, to deny women's rights. And we've raised the issue of the past and truth and legacy with him also. We have advised him that his commentary thus far on these issues as British Prime Minister has been damaging and very, very dangerous. We've reminded him of British obligations as per the Stormont House Agreement. And he has told us that he will not resile from the Stormont House Agreement. He has affirmed that his government remains committed, he says, to the provisions that we agreed as five parties and between the two governments. So we have challenged him to make sure that the necessary legislation, therefore, is brought forward. He tells us that he will act with absolute impartiality. We've told him that nobody believes that. Nobody believes that because there are no grounds to believe that there is any kind of impartiality, much less strict impartiality. We have told him that the confidence and supply agreement between himself and the DUP, between the Tories and the DUP, poisoned the groundwater here politically and made it very, very, very difficult to sustain a negotiation, much less to land on a conclusion or an agreement. He asked for our advice. We have strongly advised him that to make progress here, he needs to ensure that he is not the DUP's gopher. He needs to stop mollycoddling them. He needs to spell out the realities of life to them and put pressure on his unionist colleagues to ensure that we can land on an equitable and a sustainable agreement. In the longer term, we have advised him the constitutional changes in the air. He can't say that he hasn't been told. And the wise thing to do for London, as Dublin, is to appreciate the changes in the air and to start the preparation now. Finally, we have told him that any notion that he might crash this part of Ireland out of the European Union and cause the level of jeopardy and damage that that would entail, and that people will simply take it on the chin, or that he would expect that people would meekly go along with that, is deeply, deeply misguided, and that that would be a very dangerous course of political action.
So that's Mary Lou McDonald at this press conference, surrounded by journalists. She's taking questions now from journalists. Michelle O'Neill and Conor Murphy by her side.
Well, look, it's just, I'm not hugely surprised. I mean, it's just further evidence of the fact that there is what the DUP now call an axis between themselves and the Tories. Like, it's not our business who dines with whom. That's a matter for individuals. But the politics of this is that the DUP have used every contrivance to frustrate social and political progress here and to ensure the continuing denial of rights. They have used this as a ruse to really trample on the views of the majority of people who live here, whether it's in relation to rights issues or indeed in relation to Brexit. So are we surprised? No, we're not. Should it have happened? Of course, it shouldn't have happened. But the challenge now is for the British Prime Minister.
It's a question,
and for the Secretary of State and for the whole system.
Mary
Lou
McDonald is giving to a journalist who asked about her view on the DUP having dinner, exclusively having dinner with the Prime Minister last night.
No, I don't. I don't believe that we heard anything that would give us any great grounds of hope.
Okay, let's break away from Mary Lou McDonald now and get reaction to this from the commentator Newton Emerson and Alison Morris from the Irish News. Well, Newton, first, if we can begin with you, good morning to you. Mary Lou McDonald, not happy with what she described as this cosy relationship with the DUP, but that's the political reality, that's politics. She's going to have to understand that.
Yes, I thought what was most striking about Mary Lou McDonald's statement there was the lack of personal hostility towards Boris Johnson. Everything she said was pretty much a Sinn Féin holding position otherwise, but she does appear to be keeping her options open for building some kind of working relationship with the new Prime Minister. The one new thing I think that is creeping into the conversation is the idea of British government impartiality as required by the Good Friday Agreement, extending to being completely impartial in all political spheres. That's not what the agreement requires. It only requires impartial administration. That means no discrimination in the provision of public services that the government is responsible for example. It's just a rights and equality law, a restatement of that. It doesn't mean the government ever has to be politically impartial. And a worry that we're heading into another Brexit scenario where people begin to believe the agreement has been breached when it hasn't been, and that creates its own very dangerous reality. Nevertheless, of course, it is a reality that it is very politically difficult and destabilising for the DUP and the government to be seen to be so much in bed together. And I really do wonder why it is necessary for the DUP and Boris Johnson to have dinners together here when they can pick up the phone and speak to each other privately at any time.
And Alison Morris, they could have chosen to have that dinner privately. The public know about it, and presumably they wanted the public to know about it.
And I suppose the optics of, you know, the new Secretary of State, who has to be an independent observer of any talks process, you know, sitting on a table running with drink, laughing and smiling with members of the EUP won't play out very well. It creates a very difficult situation for Sinn Féin as well, because they're going to have to go into or try and make a compromise deal with the DUP to get the executive back up and running, while the DUP are basically, you know, snubbing them in all respects. They're, you know, they're flaunting this new relationship with Boris Johnson. But that's laced with peril as well, because Boris Johnson seems determined to go for a no-deal Brexit. I think that we've all accepted that that is his default position now. He's going to go to Europe with a deal that they're just going to, will be impossible for them to say yes to, because it'll go against everything that up until now the other member states have negotiated. He knows that, and then he's going to come back in and push through a no-deal, which will be incredibly economically damaging for Northern Ireland.
I'm going to interrupt you. I'm going to interrupt you, Alison, because you'll both want to hear this. This is Mairlee McDonald currently answering a question about direct rule.
We set out to the Prime Minister that in the event that the issues cannot be resolved here through a talks process, then the two governments jointly need to step forward. The two governments. Anybody who is toying with the notion of direct rule is on the wrong track. That cannot happen. That's not acceptable. It will not happen. And those who regard it as an option need to think again, because that would be a very, very dangerous act. A very dangerous escapade in turning the clock back, when what we now desperately need is political progress and to move to a joint future.
Well, now, Mairlee McDonald, you both tell me, Newton and Alison, talking about turning the clock back and emphasising that word dangerous. What did you mean by that, Alison?
Well, that's and Newton, I mean that's definitely not a very helpful thing to say. The direct rule has been ruled out by the Irish government, unless they can have some input into it.
She said dangerous twice. You heard that, and the
I did. And that's just ridiculous language. The Irish government said that it will accept direct rule if it has some form of input, which it defined as the restarting the British Irish Intergovernmental Conference, the Good Friday Agreement's East West Institution.
And Alison, that was done
last July. So that Irish government input is there. That meets the requirements of Dublin and Sinn Féin. If there has to be direct rule now, that requirement's met, and to speak about it being dangerous and impossible is irresponsible rhetoric.
Okay, Alison, you disagree about Mairlee McDonald using that word dangerous and talking about turning the clock back. What do you think she meant by that? But that will be one of the things that journalists will zone in on, what she's just said.
She's completely right. It is dangerous. It turns back the peace process 20 years, which you're basically saying everything that has happened since the Good Friday Agreement was pointless. It happened for nothing, because we now have to go to a direct situation. And when you see what has been happening in places like Derry and in places like Lurgan, where we're seeing a slow increase of distant republicanism, not by old men, but by very young men, if we go to a situation where we're saying the entire peace process was for nothing, it was a complete failure, we're now going to complete another direct rule. All that does is it encourages those people who are radicalising those young men. It gives them a tool to say, look, the entire thing was a nonsense. The only route that we have to a united Ireland is through violence. And you could very easily take a lot of very disadvantaged young men and exploit that situation. So I think the dangerous is probably the right word to use.
Or Mairlee McDonald could have said, we now accept that there is sufficient Irish input under direct rule via the Good Friday Agreement, East-West institutions. And so it's not the same situation we were looking at a year ago.
They don't have any say in legislating in Northern Ireland. We know that. They might have input into it, but they don't have any jurisdictional rule.
In order for them to have that, the entire agreement would have to be torn up.
Well, exactly. So they don't have it. So to say that they will have input, they might have some sort of influence. But I think that what if we go back and roll back to what we were talking about slightly earlier with the DUP and the relationship with the Tory government, I think for them that all might seem great right now, and they might be getting all kinds of promises from Boris Johnson about what he's going to deliver in the future. But they're going to have to own that, and they will have to own that for the coming years. Right. And regardless of what Brexit does to this place, they will have to own that.
We've got to leave it there, but thank you very much indeed, Newton Emerson and Alison Morris. Thank you. Mairlee McDonald has just said that they will defend their peace process, is what she has just said.